We all want to change the world. And years ago, activists did, and we protected the bald eagle. And it was a thrilling story. And so welcome to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening and someone so deeply inspired by bald eagles. And so today we're going to be talking all things eagle with Ed Hahn. He's the director of the he's a marketing and communications director for the National Eagle Center. Welcome to Food Freedom Radio, Ed.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to join you this morning.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much there is to tell. Like you said, I am the Director of Marketing and Communications here at the National Eagle Center. I have been here for about 8.5 years. And what surprises a lot of people is, no, I do not have any background in birds or biology or anything like that. I'm a marketer and a PR person by education, but certainly have picked up a lot of nature knowledge and specifically eagle knowledge here in 8.5 years. So,
well, marketing and communications, like what the birds do. I actually have a marketing and communications background. I was accredited in public relations in the 90s, so kind of a long time ago. But so there's a big event going on this weekend, March 23rd and 24th, Soar with the Eagle Spring Hatch. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so Soar with the Eagles is a festival that the center has been doing for, gosh, it might even be 20 years at this point, but for a lot of years. And basically, it just kind of celebrates, you know, spring migration. Eagles are on nests in this part of the country now, so there's a lot of excitement around that. The festival has changed post-COVID. A lot of people would remember that Soar with the Eagles used to be the entire month of March, all the weekends, 4 or 5, depending on the year. And we would have special programs and exhibitors and different activities each weekend in the month of March. Well, then we had to basically pull the plug on it mid-festival back in 2020. We got one weekend in and then everything came to a screeching halt, as we all recall. But coming out of COVID, we really decided to reimagine how we want to do the festival. And what that basically turned into is we're spreading the love and the festival season throughout the year, as opposed to just putting it in one month. So Soar with the Eagles Spring Hatch, which is happening this weekend, really kicks off the festival season. And then we will have follow-ups in June, which is our Soar Summer Splash. And then we have another festival weekend in September, which is our Soar Fall Flight. And of course, all of those festivals will have different exhibitors, different feature presentations, and gets to celebrate different things that are happening out in the environment during the different seasons of the year. So that is really exciting to be able to kind of spread that festival atmosphere throughout the year.
So, but what is happening this weekend? The show's going to air on Saturday, March 23rd. And so it's Saturday, March 23rd, and Sunday, March 24th. Does someone need to register, or is this something you show up at the last minute and...
You know, it's really up to the individual how they want to do it. You certainly can register beforehand for different things on our website, which is nationaleaglecenter.org. We have our feature presentation this weekend is actually a Soar fan favorite. Wings to Soar, they are a husband-wife duo out of Georgia, and they will be traveling here with a variety of raptors that fly around above the audience. And so they're a group that have been coming to the National Eagle Center Soar Festival for a number of years. This will be the first time they've been back since COVID, and we are just delighted to bring them back. But they have a very fun, high-energy educational program that is really perfect for learners of all ages. So if you've got a family, I mean, certainly feel free to bring everyone. It's a really fun program.
Well, I've done those bird shows before where the birds are right flying over you. And it's just something deeply magical and awe-inspiring to have a bird that close over your head. So that sounds really fun.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's nice to have flying bird shows specifically because the eagle ambassadors that we have here at the center, they're here because they're permanently injured. And those injuries prevent them from flying. So when people come here, they certainly enjoy the experience, but to be able to have a flying bird show, that is something special. And we do know that our guests and our fans really do appreciate that. And it usually brings out the crowds, which we are certainly excited for.
Okay. And then what other activities are going on?
Yeah, so we have an array of things that people could do this weekend. We do have some other exhibitors that will be on site. We have the Minnesota Non-Game DNR. They will have a table here at the festival. We also have Dick Mindakowski. He's another Soar regular. He's a native craftsman. He's a Lakota Ray Ojibwe. We will also have the International Wolf Center. We'll have a table here so people can come and find out what is happening in the world of wolves. And then Minnesota author Maricy Huggins, she will be back here at the center. She was here last year promoting her book, My Little Eagle, Theo Learns to Fly. And so she'll be doing some story time sessions for kids and families both Saturday and Sunday. And we're excited to have her back as well. And then along with that, we do have a series of activities that are going on this weekend. We have our habitat tour, which are basically kind of private field trip excursions for up to 10 people. So we have those happening this weekend. I do believe those are sold out. So a little late to that game if somebody was looking forward to that. But we do also have our behind the scenes tours. That's a somewhat new offering here at the center where guests can go behind the scenes where our avian care team actually cares for the eagles that live here at the center. And you get to see firsthand the training, how they care for them every day. You can help create some custom toys for the eagles and then watch them enjoy playing with them and shredding them. So those will be going on both Saturday and Sunday as well. And those are a small group experience. We really don't recommend, you know, children under five go in there because it's a little more advanced. But those are great experiences, and they've been very popular. We've seen a lot of people doing that this winter.
So did I hear you right? You like make a toy and then you watch the eagle destroy it?
Absolutely. You know, out in nature, eagles love to. Obviously, when they're hunting, you know, they're getting their food and they're going to rip it and tear it apart. So ripping and tearing is a very natural behavior, and it's very healthy for them because it helps keep their beak at a good shape and length. It helps keep their talons kind of filed down. And so that kind of enrichment is really some of the most important things that we can provide for the Eagle Ambassadors, because it also provides mental stimulation. And so we do that just about every day. We're giving them something, you know, we might be something as simple as a paper towel tube. You know, it's shreddable because it's cardboard, and we might stuff some paper in there. We may stuff some food in the middle just to kind of give them a little more of a tidbit. But when you go behind the scenes, you basically work with one of the avian care team to see like, okay, here are all the materials available to you. Go ahead and build your own custom toy. So you might, you know, use some twine to do something. You may use some paper cups. You may use some paper. You may use all those things. And just kind of build the toy the way you want it. And then you get to watch the chosen ambassador go to town and start playing with it and ripping it apart and shredding it. And that's always exciting for people. That's a photo op that people just, they love it.
My mind is actually going to my 90-pound dog. And I was like, you know, I could do this with the dog too, right? We could just get some little tubes, put some little things, sure, make the trips, and then watch him rip it up. But that does sound like a lot of fun to see that with an eagle and participate. Now, of course, there's a special event going on this weekend, and we'll talk more about that throughout the show. But you can visit National Eagle Center year-round. So you don't have to – it's not just for this weekend. It's a year-round place to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are open year-round. We are currently still for this week, next couple of weeks in our winter schedule, which means we're closed on Mondays, but we will be open 7 days a week starting in April. So that's right around the corner. And some of the things that I'm talking about here, you know, the behind the scenes tours, that is a daily availability. So that you can do, we call them walk-in behind the scenes tours. So we have people that have been doing that this winter. The eagle viewing habitat tours, those private field trips, those are something that you can schedule with us anytime throughout the year. So, we're open year round. You can always come in and see the eagles and catch our classroom program, but you can also engage in some of these more advanced experiences that we offer as well.
So later in the program, we're going to be talking about how DDT, the history of the eagles. But right now, I want to focus again now. So where are you located, and how do people find out about you? And again, mention some of the special things going on this weekend.
Yeah, so we are located in Wabasha, Minnesota. We are right off of Highway 61. So if you live up in Minneapolis or St. Paul or the metro area, it's about 90 or so miles, probably an hour and a half's drive. Beautiful drive. If you've never come to the center, I mean, you're south of Red Wing, you're driving right along Lake Pepin and the Mississippi River, and it is just a gorgeous habitat. And it really is the heart of bald eagle territory in this part of the country. So it's very intentional why the National Eagle Center is located where it is. And we are always happy to welcome in new guests and returning guests and to share the Eagle Ambassadors with them and all the knowledge that we have about these magnificent creatures.
That drive down Highway 61 is amazing. We think a lot about the North Shore, but that drive is just so spectacular. In fact, I remember the last time I was driving, it was like, I don't know, it was like just so awe-inspiring to be there, and it's so close to us, and I don't think it gets its respect.
Yeah, and you know, it's been one of the, I know in the past it's actually received, the top 50 drive, especially in the fall with the colors. It is a recognized scenic byway. It's part of the Great River Road as well. But yeah, it's just a beautiful area, a lot of natural resources for people to enjoy, lots of state parks, campgrounds. If you're an outdoors person that has a boat, I mean, certainly being out on the Mississippi is something that you can do really three seasons out of the year, or maybe this year you can do it all four seasons. But it's a wonderful, wonderful area, and there's always new things to explore and experience. And of course, it's not just bald eagles that call this area home. There are so many wild animals, raptors, birds, so many things to experience and see and observe. So we truly are fortunate in Minnesota as a whole, but certainly in the southeastern corner.
Yeah, the southeastern Minnesota. So we're going to take a break. We're talking all things eagle with Ed Hahn. He's the Director of Marketing and Communications for the National Eagle Center. And this weekend is the Eagle Spring Hatch, March 23rd and 24th. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We can work it out. We can work out our relationship with nature, our relationship with water, and our relationship with eagles. This is Laura Hedlund. I'm a student of nature-led gardening and someone deeply inspired by bald eagles. And joining me right now is Ed Hahn. He's the Director of Marketing and Communications for the National Eagle Center. Now, the National Eagle Center, Wabasha, Minnesota, is actually the eagle capital of America. So talk about that.
Yeah, so that's a designation that was adopted within the last year by the city council here in Wabasha. And it was a designation that was really advocated for by Mr. Preston Cook. Now, Preston Cook, he's now a part-time resident, mostly full-time, but still kind of part-time resident of Wabasha here. And he is a major benefactor and supporter of the National Eagle Center. And a lot of that support and being a benefactor comes through this incredible collection of eagle artifacts, historical artifacts, art, ephemera, anything you can imagine eagle related that he has collected over 50 plus years now. And it basically is an exploration of the importance, the meaning, the inspiration that eagle imagery and iconography have had throughout all of American history. And it's really interesting. It's valuable for the center to really introduce this whole new dimension to the eagle's story. You know, historically, we've been very focused on the natural eagle, talking about their biology, their behavior, their physiology, even their habitat, certainly. But what the American Eagle Collection provides is this window into all these aspects of American life and culture that most people, I don't think, even realize how common and how pervasive eagle imagery is in our society. So when you go into the gallery space, I mean, you can see all sorts of different things. He has, very influential and important works of art from John James Audubon, who was, kind of the first and foremost ornithologist in American history. He has eagle toys. He has stamps and money. He has a doorknob from the Eisenhower Building in Washington, D.C. that features a bald eagle on it. He has pieces the dais that FDR gave one of his inaugural addresses at.
You know, this is fancy.
Just incredible artifacts. But again, the common theme to all of these things is that they feature bald eagles or eagles in one way or another. And when people really start to think about it, to explore the collection, to go through the galleries, and certainly if you have the opportunity to talk with Mr. Cook himself, you really learn about just how, you know, ingrained in the American experience and American culture the eagle is. You know, one thing that a lot of people mistakenly assume is that the bald eagle is the official, national bird of the United States. It isn't.
Oh.
It is the national symbol of the United States, but currently the United States does not have a national bird. We have a national mammal, which is the bison. We have a national flower, but we currently do not have a national bird. And so, that's one of his passions is to hopefully see that be recognized by Congress here in the not so distant future. But he's very passionate about just everything eagle. And he could tell you, you know, where that passion comes from. He was inspired when he saw a film called A Thousand Clowns.
We're going to play a little clip directly from Preston Cook, because it is, and I love everything you're saying. So, Brett, if you can play this little clip from Preston Cook.
A friend took me to the movies in 1966. I remember the month. It was May of 1966. And the movie was A Thousand Clowns. And in the movie, it had one line, "You can't have too many eagles." And after that movie, I decided I wanted to collect eagles. I was drafted into the Army in October of that year, and I was issued two uniforms, one a regular fatigue uniform and the other a dress uniform. And on the dress uniform were these wonderful brass gold-plated buttons. And I looked at those and I said, when I am discharged from the military, I'm going to cut those off and take them home. After many years of collecting, I realized that there was no repository, no museum that ever represented the American eagle. So I did a nationwide search from Alaska to the Atlantic coast. And after some years of deciding where it should be, I felt that the National Eagle Center is the right place. I'm real excited about sharing the collection. I've been collecting for over 50 years now, and it's not been shared by very many people. It's been in my custody, and it's been in my home, and it's been in my warehouses during these years. So I'm real excited that the National Eagle Center has agreed to accept the collection, which will give it an opportunity to share it with a multitude of people. I think that most people are going to find something to relate to with the collection. They will come in with a hobby or an interest or a profession, and they're going to find something that they can identify with. About 7.5 years ago, I started writing a book and putting it together. The book is a photography book. It is a book composed of 1,340 images from the collection. It represents all the different areas and the way the eagle has been used in society from 1782 to present. And it's been a lot of work and it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully it will fully represent what the eagle collection is.
So that was a clip from Preston Cook. And so tell us again about how did the Eagle Center even start, and what was this relationship with Preston Cook? And again, this display is available year-round, so people can go anytime when they're taking that beautiful drive down 61 in southeast Minnesota.
Yeah, so Mr. Cook is actually, like he said in the clip, you know, he's been interested in eagles for quite some time, and he's actually been involved in several different eagle-related organizations around the country. I know he was involved in the American Eagle Foundation, I believe, whichever one is up in Alaska, it escapes me at the moment, but he was involved in that organization for a while. And then around 10 or 12 years or so ago, he was looking for a permanent home for his collection that he had accrued. And like he said, he did his due diligence. He kind of, you know, looked across the country at different organizations, and he really just felt that Wabasha was the place where he wanted it to be, at the National Eagle Center. And so ever since then, he's really, you know, he has a condominium here in Wabasha now. So he and his wife spend quite a bit of the year here. The rest is history. He's still collecting things here and there to add to the collection, but he's certainly involved in how we're curating it at this point and cataloging it and all those aspects of having a collection. He's just really passionate about sharing not only his interest in the eagle, but also just, you know, it's more than just a bird in American culture. And I think that's what he aims to have his collection show people. Because, again, it's an eye-opening thing. You probably don't even realize, you know, going about your daily life, how many times you see eagle imagery, you know, whether it's on a quarter that's in your pocket, or you might see a sign on a business that it's eagle something. And there's countless, you know, examples of that in the collection. And so, like he said, it doesn't matter who you are or what your path is in life or what your interests are. There's something in the collection that you will be able to identify with. And that really, it's a whole nother avenue and aspect of eagles that we can now educate on here at the center. It's, you know, we've always been very much about the natural bird, the biology, the physiology. Now we can really get into the historical and cultural aspects of it, which I think rounds out the experience.
And one of the stories of the eagle was almost the avoidance of tragedy. And I think especially as we face so many nitrates in the water, climate crisis, so many of these tragedies of, it's literally raining glyphosate on us, is to remember the story of the eagle and how it was almost endangered and how we rallied to protect it. And so we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about DDT, the pesticide, and the survival of eagles. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and joining us is Ed Hahn, the Director of Marketing and Communications with the National Eagle Center, and their website is nationaleaglecenter.org. Big event going on this weekend, the Eagle Spring Hatch, March 23rd and 24th, but of course you can visit year-round, including taking a cruise. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as well. So we'll be right back. Let's come out and play with our Prudence. And the eagles is a wonderful reminder of how humans can learn to be prudent with the natural world. I'm Laura Hedlund, and you're listening to Food Freedom Radio. And I'm someone deeply inspired by bald eagles. With us right now is Ed Hahn, Director of Marketing and Communications with the NationalEagleCenter.org. So, Ed, let's talk about DDT and what happened with the eagles in the United States.
Yeah, it's I'll start by saying the recovery of the bald eagle is the most successful conservation story we have in North America, possibly the world, but I'm only going to speak for North America right now. The story is actually quite interesting. Roll back the clock back to the 1940s. You have World War II. You have a major theater of war in the Pacific. And of course, a lot of the Pacific campaign was fought in a tropical setting. Well, when you have tropical environments, you tend to have a lot of mosquitoes, flies, insects, and that also tends to carry a lot of airborne diseases. And so DDT was developed to be an insecticide, and it was a very, very effective insecticide. There are people who will talk about how you can give DDT some credit in winning the war. Because it helped reduce instances of malaria and other diseases among U.S. troops. And it worked so well that when the war was over, you know, they said, hey, you know, we can probably use this back home, too, to help keep people, you know, free from bugs and mosquitoes and, you know, those things that
tend
to irritate us.
And it was widely used
summer.
In agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so, yeah, it started seeing widespread use in North America. And we actually have photos that we can share with people here at the center that will show scenes from the 1950s where you have beaches just covered with kids playing, people laying out on blankets. And at the same time, you have these trucks with these sprayers literally just driving down the beach, spraying this white mist, this clouds of DDT into the air. Now, you know, by today's standard, we'd say, well, what were they thinking? You know, that's ridiculous. But what was so, I guess, frightening and about DDT, especially as it relates to eagles and other birds that were impacted, is that it's not a poison in the sense that you are exposed to it and just drop over dead. And certainly that was true with people. You know, it did not have any effects that were immediately apparent. And so for that reason, we're thinking, oh, you know, it's really effective at what it's designed to do. And, it's safe. So with bald eagles, you know, a bald eagle, a natural lifespan is about 20 to 25 years. And they were not necessarily being poisoned and just dropping over dead. What was happening was that DDT was preventing them from calcium uptake in their diets. When a bald eagle eats, their stomach acid is strong enough that they are digesting everything that they eat except for feather and fur. So if they eat a mouse or a fish or a rabbit, all of those bones in the skeleton are going to be absorbed, and there's lots of calcium there, and that's how they are getting calcium in their diet, specifically the females. Then come nesting season, those females would go to lay their eggs, and calcium is obviously a major component to eggshells. And they were laying eggs that were so thinly shelled that they were crushing them under their own weight during incubation. Now, a little bit of a science sidestep here. Bald eagles, despite being very large birds, always surprise people at how lightweight they actually are. A typical female in this part of the country may only weigh, you know, 10 and a half pounds. When people come to the center and they say, oh, my gosh, they look so big. You know, how much do they weigh? We always play that game with them. Well, what do you think they weigh? Common guesses are 40, 30 pounds. They usually equate the size of the birds they're seeing to, oh, you know, it's about the same size as that turkey we had at Thanksgiving. And that was 30 pounds. They're very lightweight, and birds need to be lightweight to fly. So we also occasionally will do an egg crushing demonstration for some of our classroom groups where we'll take a standard chicken egg that you'd buy at the store. And we put in a contraption where we can slowly add weight on the top. And it's amazing how strong the structure of an egg is under normal conditions. We have had demonstrations where the egg has gotten up to over 60 pounds before it crushes.
Wow.
So you had bald eagles in their own nest crushing their eggs under 10, 12 pounds of weight.
I got to believe that was so hard for the eagle. I mean, to just be dealing with that and not understanding that moment of why is my eggs not being crushed? I mean, that must have been very, very difficult for the eagle.
I don't know. I wouldn't anthropomorphize too much. But
I do.
the problem really became that because those eagles are living, you know, two decades or longer, they weren't reproducing at the rates they needed to regenerate their population. But it was a slow problem to reveal itself because they're living 20, 25 years. And then suddenly that generation is dying off and suddenly you have a very steep decline in population. I actually had a guest here a month or so ago and he said, oh, so it was a generational problem. Like that is a really good way to put it. So you had people like Rachel Carson, who obviously prominent researcher, naturalist. She really raised the alarm with Silent Spring and other research that she made public that said, look, there are things in the environment now which are causing harm. And how embarrassing would it have been for the United States to lose its national symbol to extinction due to unintended human consequences? So the real takeaway from the bald eagle story is that suddenly you had this awareness. And it wasn't just, well, you know, hand-wringing and hemming and hawing of, oh, how do we solve this problem? You know, action was taken in very short order. You had the public buy-in. You had the banning of DDT. You had the creation of the Endangered Species Act, which put additional protections on bald eagles. It's already protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Act. But you essentially had the whole of society, you know, hearing the message, taking it to heart, and taking action to support the bald eagle. Here's another crazy statistic. Between 1968 and 1972, along the Upper Mississippi River Wildlife and Fish Refuge, which literally runs from here in Wabasha, it starts right at Wabasha, and it runs 261 miles downriver to Rock Island, Illinois. Between 68 and 72, there was one pair of nesting bald eagles left.
So repeat that. So we were down to one pair of nesting bald eagles because of the DDT.
In that stretch. Today, there's well over 400 nesting pairs of bald eagles along that same stretch. So, yeah, there was more than one nesting pair of bald eagles left, but just in that very prominent area, there was only one left. So that shows you how much they've recovered and how close we came to losing the bald eagle forever. You had a lot of captive breeding programs that were going on. That's very tough to do. That takes a lot of time. You need a lot of space. You need a lot of resources to do that. Subsequently today, you really don't have a lot of captive breeding going on because it is so hard to do. But thankfully, the population doesn't need it. I've actually seen some reports fairly recently from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And the estimates are today that the bald eagle population in North America is likely at levels not seen since the first Europeans arrived on the continent.
Really? That's beautiful. No, so the bald eagle was listed as an endangered species in 1978, and it was really a sign of active democracy. Rachel Carson and others that, like, wait a second, we got to shift things, and we were able to. And now eagles are back, and it's just, it's inspirational.
Yeah, they were delisted. They were taken off the endangered species list in 2007. And today, you know, it's always very heartening because we have lots of guests, you know, of an older demographic that will come in and say, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I remember when I saw my first bald eagle. Because back then there was a period of time, you know, certainly kids today wouldn't have this experience, but there was a period of time where seeing a bald eagle was a really big deal. You remember when and where you were. Mm-hmm. But today we have people coming in, you know, like from the Twin Cities, they'll say, man, you know, I'm driving to work in the morning and not only do we have a pair nesting in my neighborhood now, like I'm seeing them on my drive to work. And they're like, is that normal? And it's like, well, yes, it is normal. Yeah. We probably haven't seen bald eagles in those areas for many decades because of how the population was impacted, but they're very territorial birds. And so the bigger this population gets, you're going to start to see more of these population density pressures are going to start pushing them back into areas that we haven't seen for many, many years. The other thing that I like to tell people who share those stories from urban areas is that, you know, bald eagles are not going to set up shop or build a nest in an area that really is not conducive to what they need. So if you have a bald eagle in your suburb of Minneapolis or St. Paul, that probably means, A, you have good trees because they need big, strong trees for those nests. There's plenty of food, you know, and they're primarily fish eaters. And you probably have a lot of clean water, relatively speaking. So to have a species like bald eagle setting up shop in an urban area, I do think is a credit to how good the habitat is in those areas.
And how enriching. I wanted to briefly mention that, like, we talked about the 1950s on, but a little earlier in American history, there was also some negative stories about bald eagles. There was even some fake reports that bald eagles will take baby infants. So talk a little bit about that history of eagles in the United States, the early 1800s, 1900s. And
yeah, so bald eagles are an apex predator, which means they're at the top of the food chain. We're apex predators as well. So are wolves, so are bears. And, you know, certainly birds, but raptors specifically, have captured human imagination since, you know, the dawn of civilization and probably even earlier. The fact that they can fly is something that has always captured the human imagination. then being the national symbol, because they obviously, they are strong birds, they are predators, they live very independently, they have the freedom to fly, all of these things that we certainly value in the American experience, and we feel that really embodies what it is to be American. Along with that, I think comes a certain level of fascination that people start to build into that as well. I mean, let's admit it, the more fantastical a story, the more people seem to gravitate towards it. And, you know, we hear it, maybe not every day, but very, very often, you know, oh, yeah, they took down a bald eagle nest in my neighborhood and it had 50 dog collars in it. And every time we hear the story, we say, look, we want to know more information about it. Here's our card. Like, tell us, you know, what DNR office made that discovery, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife office. Like, we want names. No one has ever followed up with names or details, place, date. It's always like, I heard from a friend, or, you know.
Well, I've heard that story. I thought it was true, but it may not be true. And I heard it was cat colors, not, but.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Yeah, it's dog, cat, doesn't matter. But it's a very common misconception. Now, is there a danger to small animals from bald eagles? Absolutely. We wouldn't say that there's not. You really have to consider the circumstances of what's happening. You know, a bald eagle can go several days between a meal, but the more days that it goes without eating, the more desperate it's going to get for food. So that's a situation where if you have an individual that hasn't eaten for 5 days, they're starting to get very desperate, and they're going to start taking more risks in acquiring food. The thing that we always tell people is a couple things to keep in mind. One, bald eagles generally stay away from and respect other terrestrial predators. So when they see dogs, they are generally going to keep their distance. Same thing with people. So you put that together and say, okay, you have a pet dog, you're out in your park or you're out in your backyard, stay with your pet, because they're going to respect that. The thing is to remember about bald eagles is when they acquire food, they are looking to conserve as much energy at all times as they can, A, because they don't know when that next meal is going to be. But also, flying takes a lot of energy. It'd be like you or I running everywhere we go. If they go after something like a dog or a cat, that animal is going to fight back, and that's going to make it's going to be dangerous for the eagle, which is why I said they're taking more risks when they get hungrier. But there's no guarantee of success. Now, the other thing is people say, well, it'll grab them and it'll fly off with them. Well, we've already kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, and how much do bald eagles weigh? They actually don't weigh nearly as much as people think they weigh. And that's because in order to fly, you have to be lightweight. A bald eagle can only carry at maximum about a third of its body weight and still stay airborne. So if you have a female bald eagle in Minnesota that weighs 10.5 pounds, that means the maximum that bald eagle can carry is about 3 pounds.
So my 90-pound dog is safe.
Your 90-pound dog is absolutely
and
safe.
And probably the 6-pound dog is safe too. But anyway, we're getting to take a break.
You'd have to have a very, very small animal for it to be able to fly off with. The other thing is there is a danger, and the danger is the talons. We do know of documented cases where a bald eagle will come down, it tried to snatch a dog or a cat or whatever, and as it's trying to grab the animal, those razor-sharp talons are going to puncture that animal.
Okay.
And that's a situation where, yes, you need to get that animal immediate veterinary care, because otherwise it's at risk of bleeding out.
Okay.
But the risk is not being flown away. It's the talons.
Okay, great. We're going to need to take a break. We're going to come back with our last segment. We're talking all things eagle with Ed Hahn with the NationalEagleCenter.org. A special event going on this weekend, March 23rd and 24th, the Spring Hatch. So we'll be back with more details on that. And you're listening to Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Well, Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening and someone inspired by bald eagles. And we've been talking all things bald eagles with Ed Hahn, Director of Marketing and Communications for NationalEagleCenter.org. And we've been saying that the national eagle almost went extinct. It was listed as an endangered species in 1978, but has made an amazing recovery. And now we need to move forward and make that same recovery on different plants, on different birds. So you want to talk about some of those, the crane and the billet and turtles? And
yeah, I mean, you know, the thing that I always tell guests and visitors is that, you know, at this point, yes, the bald eagle thankfully is no longer endangered. The important role it has to play now is as the example for conservation moving forward. We've learned so many lessons from our experience with the bald eagle that we need to apply those lessons to the myriad of wildlife out there that now face all sorts of threats, whether it's, you know, endangerment, merely threatened at this point. But a lot of the things that are impacting those species is pollution, habitat loss. Habitat loss is a big one. And of course, you know, climate change is happening. I think it'd be pretty hard to deny it after this winter specifically. But all of those things. So any steps that we can take, you know, certainly help. But again, you know, going back to the bald eagle's experience, it was the fact that everybody worked together. It was not just government saying, oh, we need to do this. I mean, you had public buy-in. You had the business sector bought into that. And when we all work together towards a common goal, which Americans are very good at, once you have everyone pulling in the same direction, we can accomplish amazing things.
And let's think and remember that every time we see our national symbol flying, let's remember that it is a sense of unity and united we stand. So we're down to our last 3 minutes. So tell us again, it's the Eagle Spring Hatch, March 23rd and March 24th. No registration required. So tell us a little bit more about what's going on this weekend.
Yeah, so we have special exhibitors and special programs happening. We have Wings to Soar, the Flying Raptor Program, which will be doing shows on Saturday and Sunday. You can get all the information on our website at nationaleaglecenter.org/soar. And then we also, coming up this summer, we have our summer river cruises. Those are now open for registration. We have a series of 12 cruises that we will be hosting starting on May 25th and running through October 12th. You can get all that information on our website. And yeah, so we're excited to do that. We will have our next SOAR Festival coming up in June. And until then, you know, starting in April, we'll be open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
So I also want to remember to mention getting the lead out is so important for eagles now. And also a little bit about John Lash and the of 18,000 acres of land. I mean, tell us a little bit about those issues.
Yeah, so one of our youngest and newest eagle ambassadors here at the center is Ambassador Latch, and he is our only native Minnesota bald eagle. And he was rescued just outside of Winona, Minnesota on the Mississippi River. And his name is actually in honor of John Latch. And John Latch was a very prominent businessman and philanthropist in Winona in the late 1800s and early 20th century. And we felt very worthy to honor him because he bought and then donated upwards of 18,000 acres for public use during his life. And so John Latch's legacy as, you know, a conservationist, a philanthropist, certainly lives large in the Winona community area. And yeah, so his namesake lives on right now with our only Minnesota native eagle, Ambassador Latch.
So a last minute of the show, there's a lot to be inspired by this story. So again, tell us about the National Eagle Center, where it's located, the website.
Yeah, we are about, again, 90 miles south of the Twin Cities Metro. We are right along the Mississippi River, between the Mississippi River and Highway 61. And yeah, so we are open year round. We will be open 7 days a week beginning in April, 10 to 4 daily. And you can come meet the eagles. You can catch an eagle program. You can do the behind the scenes experience. You can explore the American Eagle Gallery and a lot of other seasonal activities that we will be sharing with people throughout the year.
And a special event going on this weekend, the Eagle Spring Hatch, March 23rd and 24th. I thank you so much, Ed Hahn, Director of Marketing and Communication, NationalEagleCenter.org. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, just thank you for the opportunity to come on, talk Eagles with you today. It was a pleasure and always happy to do it.
Right. And it's such a, we really need inspiration. And to think that the Eagle almost went extinct, but we did find that way of coming together. And now the Eagle, again, is abundant. And we get to be blessed every day by seeing it soar. And in some ways, watching an Eagle soar helps us soar. So
you got it.
That's it.
Yep. So it's good therapy.
Good therapy. Yes, great. All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for listening to Food Freedom Radio. Have a great week.